hamster with a blunt penknife would do it quicker.
Welcome back to A Hamster with a Blunt Penknife, the Doctor Who commentary podcast. Hello.
Hello. Hi, Joe.
What are you doing in my home?
Well, I wanted to explore your man cave.
Yes, I explored yours in great depth. I have to say, he walked in, he started fiddling about.
I did. I
was touching everything.
Putting my fingers where I shouldn't put my fingers, all over things still covered in cellophane. We are, of course, talking about Big Finish CDs.
But please don't mention what's still covered in cellophane, all right? Just in case anyone's listening. Do you know when we did Schalke on Too Hot for TV?
Yeah.
Our incredible success across an entire week of the 6th anniversary. That was still in bloody cellophane when I took it off the shelf. Sorry, Paul Cornell.
That's okay. You got your money. That's the main thing. He doesn't care if you watch it or not.
That's a good point. Where was it who said that one time? Oh, it was Colin on the Terror of the Vervoids commentary. He's talking to Michael Craig and he goes, well, maybe someone will get so angry, they'll throw the Blu-ray on the wall in disgust. And Michael Craig goes, no. He goes, no. Colin goes, no, they'll have to buy another one. He's very aware of the money,
yes.
Colin.
Isn't yeah, he is. He loves a few quid. Well, as these actors get older, I'm sure their pensions weren't all that. It's like, how have you make a few quid? I once went to Peter Miles' house, you know, name dropping.
What occurred in Peter Miles' house?
We just talked about Doctor Who spin-offs, but he was telling me about his pension was basically a state pension and then whatever money he got from Doctor Who DVDs and VHS tapes.
Was that his income at that point?
Yeah, pretty much.
That's Colin's. In fact, when Colin did Hello, Welcome to Finish Big, I thought he was going to say, right, that's 50 quid afterwards.
Yeah, but also, Colin goes to conventions every weekend and earns about $5,000 from taking selfies with people. So, you know, Peter Miles missed that train, unfortunately.
He's living a very luxurious lifestyle on the back of Doctor Who. Well, look, Dylan, recently we've had, you know, 3 Doctor Who specials come out.
We have.
Obviously, we could talk about those.
Yeah.
There's been numerous Big Finish releases come out. We could be talking about those. What have you chosen to talk about today?
Well, it's the story that the BFI chose to celebrate the Doctor Who anniversary with their only showing in November at the BFI. And it was released, I think it was the only official Blu-ray and DVD release of the 50th anniversary in November as well. And it is, of course, the animation of The Underwater Mist.
What a choice.
And not only is it the animation, but we're going to do the animation all the way through. So we're not jumping into those real episodes. No. Animations all the way.
Oh, do you know what? Right, when I watch this, it works so much better as an animation.
It does.
Than it does.
That's exactly why I wanted to do it. I was like, this, I'm not really a huge fan of the anime. I watch them, but they bore me quite a lot because, I mean, I've said this before and it's, you know, scandalous. Most of them, I wish they'd edit them down into about 50 minutes and just get rid of all the faff in between.
As they recently did with the Daleks
and just make it a slightly more dynamic cartoon because while, if the episodes existed, I would want to see them in full. I mean, I say that. They do for The Underwater Menace. But when they're in animated form, I sometimes find that they just go on a little bit. And once you've seen all the sets and all the characters, you're like, oh, it's these guys making the same seven movements again.
You know, I do occasionally think that you are slightly out of step with the rest of fandom.
Apparently so.
The suggestion that you had of rebooting Doctor Who by completely dismissing the 60 years and remaking the stories now. I don't think I'm out of line to say that you generally prefer Chris Chibnall's output to Rusty Davis' number two.
Yeah. I mean, Rusty Davis is number two. he's only had 3 stories, so, you know.
So, yeah, it's hard to judge at this point. And now, you know, your suggestion that they, in fact, do not remain faithful in any way, shape or form to the original material and release edited versions. Yeah. I feel like you should be handed Doctor Who, you know.
Someone needs to give me Doctor Who, and then I'll see how quickly I can get it cancelled.
You remember John F. Kennedy?
Yeah.
And John Lennon?
Going out the same way.
We'll add Dylan Reese to that list.
Me.
Well, I'm going to jump into episode 1 in a second. I'm going to ask you one last question before we go in, though. And that is, what is your general feeling of season 4?
Season 4 has always been a bit of a mystery. Like, growing up in the 90s, or any time that wasn't the 60s, I suggest, season 4 was the most, it felt like it was the most missing there was the Hartnell stories at the beginning. There's some Troughton stories that there wasn't a lot of pictures. There was just little bits that existed. So it was the most exciting Doctor Who could be in a way because you knew so little about it. Now, obviously, we've had years of access to the audios and we've had animations and we've had episode rediscoveries and things like that. It feels more accessible than it's ever been. But I think it's a wonderful... It's a time of upheaval and change and great creativity and experiments that don't always work, but I'm here for it and love it.
It's a weird thing because I think it starts very experimentally. It starts sort of doing a bit of the same. You've got a historical, then you have a mad shift in the 10th planet, which we recently talked about on Hams of Abroad.
Yes, live on YouTube.
I know. Oh, I listened to that back. It's fabulous. This is very indulgent saying that.
Then, we're fucking great, aren't we?
We're amazing. Jesus Christ. Why do you think you're in my fucking schedule so much? Then you have, like you say, so it's this whole period of shift and change, which definitely the Underwater Menace basically slips through the cracks, I think. Well, we've got to make something. Let's put this on. We've got this script from Jeff Reel. But we're heading towards a formula.
Yeah.
I don't think we quite get there in this season.
No.
We certainly get there in the next season.
Exactly. It's kind of the last time classic Doctor Who, the sort of 60s stuff, hasn't found its feet. It's still trying new things, and it's not, like you say, the formularic thing. And that's not a negative thing, but Doctor Who's identity, it feels like it's properly carved out in the next season and then beyond, when you start to get the Time Lords introduced and you get UNIT and it's like, oh, this is what the show is. Up until the end of season 4, it absolutely can be anything. It's that original remit and everybody's got a different idea of what it could and should be as we get the revolving door of producers and writers.
Kind of exciting then, isn't it? With all exciting. Those voices.
Yeah. And what could be more exciting than the Underwater
Menace? I know. I still think it's got one of the best villains of all time.
It does.
Well, shall we see him in action?
Yes. Shall we enter?
Go on.
In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, play.
Shall we enter? You just said. Yeah. Shall we enter? Very excited Atlantis. For a second. Yeah. Whereabouts is that?
Atlantis.
They do say, don't they, in the script that they think they might be somewhere around the.
Well, I thought it was a Greek restaurant off the
Old Kent
Road.
I can't remember now. Is that right?
Now, I like Doctor Who, black and white Doctor Who in colour, as they've recently done with the Daleks and with this. But I have to say, I always think it's weird when the titles are in colour.
Yeah.
I don't know why, I just do.
They do, for some of them, this very weird Pertwee-esque, like, Technicolour.
Yeah. Now, we've opened on this shot of the TARDIS, and I love that the fact they've gone to the great detail of making the TARDIS look like it's wooden, the console's wooden and painted as it would have
they've
been.
They've got an eye for detail. And you can see the balsa wood from here.
I'm not sure who that guy is playing the second Doctor, but maybe they have to pay more money if they pay for the Patrick Troughton likeness, so they've gone for his chubby brother. That's Big Finish, Av. I can say that, I'm a chubby guy.
That was nice, well done. I know that Annika Wills, you know, the first animation they did, she had a few things to say, didn't she?
Annika Wills has always got a few things to say about everything.
But she's literally there, quoting us, going, can't you get me right? I didn't have piggy little eyes like that. I think now they've managed to get the three companions.
Yeah.
Relatively authentic.
Yeah. No, I think they all look like who they're supposed to. But also it's a cartoon, it doesn't have to look 100%.
Is the animation smoother than it used to be?
I think so, yeah.
Are we using more frames or something now?
I don't know, but it does... I hadn't really noticed, but here it does... It looks a little... It does look smoother.
Like that first version of The Power of the Daleks, people were sort of jumping across, you know?
Yeah, it was only sort of two steps removed from Death Comes to Time at that point.
I'm almost willing to bet that the location work did not look like this originally.
It's like the Macra Terror as well, when you get those vast landscapes and you're like, I've seen that picture of the TARDIS on the cliff edge and it's literally the size of the wall in your living room here.
Is that all right, though, to make those changes?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm 100% here for it. I think, what's the point of making an animation that looks like a shoddy 60s studio?
What's going on with those doors?
Oh, yeah, they did. That's what they did. People lost their shit about that.
Oh, was it controversial?
Oh, yeah. Now, the other controversy here is, of course, the Doctor in episode one wears his stovepipe hat, and he's not wearing it here.
Oh my god.
The rough
god.
And tumble machine all over again.
I can
again.
Only imagine who was up in arms about this.
Was it Ian Levine?
It's a good chance.
Yeah. No, he hated this whole thing because it wasn't like the original. There is definitely more movement. They are smooth. There is smoother movements, which I think is exciting. And then we pan up to this
fabulous sort of ziggurat.
Yeah. Or just a rock.
I'm sure that's what it looked like. In the original, you know, have you ever studied the telesnaps in much depth? Have you watched the recons?
Yes. So the first time I would have seen this would have been sending off for a videotape from Joint Venture, the recon company. And they would have sent me back a recon of episodes 1, 2, and 4. And a bootleg copy of episode 3. That's how you got your bootlegs of those. I can't remember them, so pray tell.
All I remember is it certainly wasn't the three of them scaling an enormous mountain like this. There was basically like a hole in a rock that they went through. A bit like Mind Warp, you know, that hole they go through there in the cliff face.
Now, what I really like about this animation, obviously it's taking liberties and making it look more interesting, but this looks like the cartoons I would watch on a Saturday morning on ITV or BBC One or whatever it was. It's He-Man, it's Scooby-Doo, it's Thundercats, it's the wrestling cartoon.
Can I ask you, should animation not have come on in the last 25 years?
They don't have the money for that. Okay. Like, how many copies is this selling? It's got to be 20,000 at the most. And they've got to...
Surely that's going to make its money back, though.
Yeah, it'll make its money back. It's got to make its money back, otherwise they wouldn't do any more. But that is not enough money when you think of the production costs, all the people you've got to pay. That is not enough money to do some Netflix-style mega animation.
When they use the soundtrack, then, do they have to pay all the actors?
Yeah, you're still paying the residuals that you would releasing a TV show and stuff.
Yeah, but it's like £4.5 or something.
Probably something like that. But it's like... I don't think people quite realise what a niche product this is.
What, the animation of the Underworld?
No, it's true. Like,
I know precisely how niche this is. Yeah. I know no one else in my life has got this product except me.
I've got it.
Well, yeah, but you're as mad as I am.
Did
you look at him going up that rock that's completely smooth?
Yeah, I love it. It's this is like Dragonfire all over again.
Oh, let's not go there again. Do you know what? I found that now. I can finally see that ledge you were talking about.
Yeah. I bought that up on the
Years I've been
the
going on about
well.
That cliffhanger. Yeah.
Doctor Who fans have been wrong their entire life, unsurprisingly.
I essentially need to watch all of Doctor Who with you now, and you'll be able to point out where I'm going wrong.
When you've seen Dragonfire as much as me... You start to notice these things.
Can I ask you, did you have a hard-on when they mentioned Savlon Gicks? Oh, God! Savlon Glitz in the giggle.
Yes, I did, yeah.
That's the first reference to Dragonfire since Dragonfire.
Oh, no. My brother messaged me afterwards and goes, isn't it funny that we all thought we were going to get a massive reboot and literally one of the first words the new Doctor says is Mavic Chen.
And Adric. Yeah.
Adric's been all over the place the last few years, hasn't he?
Dear Jesus Christ.
It's seeding a spin-off.
On the commentary, Russell Davis goes, poor Shooty, because he didn't have a clue. He was talking about props to his acting.
I hope that what we're in for actually is an Adric spin-off, but it's like a Bear Grylls reality show of him surviving on planet Earth.
I mean, I would watch it. Yeah. I'd watch it. Jesus, I'll watch anything, mate.
So they've all been captured in Atlantis by some rather cool-looking guards.
Well, we don't know we're on Atlantis yet, do we?
No, they're going down in a lift.
Now, what I quite like is the fact this is basically your traditional Doctor Who adventure at this point. They've landed, they've explored.
They got captured.
I'd be willing to say that this is about the only part of the story that is a traditional Doctor Who adventure.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's weird monsters and stuff.
I would like you to compare and contrast as we go through this the two Atlantises that we see in Doctor Who.
The one from the Time Meddler? Not Time Meddler, the Time Monster as well.
That's the one.
There's a distinct lack of Ingrid pit tits in this one.
But plenty of Annika Wills. Yes, so we're all right.
I know she's covered up, isn't she?
A bit too much, actually.
I'm not looking at her cartoon tits. A shoddily designed lift there that makes you all fall over when you get to the bottom.
I love all the liberties they take with how the guards look.
Me too.
And the temple of Andor, all of it.
It's just making a bigger, more exciting world, and we'll get to the fish people when we get to the fish people.
I know we've got sort of archaic animation here, but did you watch this on the BFI screen?
No, I didn't.
I bet it was really fun.
I'm sure it was. It can't have been any worse than fucking Galaxy 4.
Did you watch that on the BFI screen?
Yeah, I had to leave for a couple of episodes in the middle.
She'd walk, go to the bar,
get
a couple of drinks.
Yeah, I thought about getting into heroin actually that day. the BFI didn't serve anything strong enough to get me through that.
I've only watched that once.
I put it on at home while I was working.
Don't you tell me you made your other half ensure Galaxy 4.
But she was like, what the fuck are you watching? Because it's all just bleeps and blops and bleeps and blops. She's like, what are you doing? Just that for 25 minutes. That's episode one, basically.
Oh, dear. Now, I would like to discuss with you, and I realise they are animated right now, just how hot this companion team is. As a bisexual man, is this a companion team that you'd like to travel the universe with?
I'm really into 2D animations myself. it's my number one kink.
I'm not kidding you. They are pretty, though, this three.
They are very pretty. I mean, the thing is, I find like Ben and Polly sort of frozen in time as pretty, but Jamie, I'm just used to pervy old fucking Fraser Hines telling stories for years and years and years.
Yeah. The older he got, the worse those stories felt.
Especially as society moved on as well. I'm surprised he's allowed to do Doctor Who conventions anymore.
I'm almost convinced that every story has the caveat of, you know, things aren't how they were back in the day. You know, you can't get away with nothing anymore.
He shagged everyone, didn't he?
He was very pretty.
Yeah, but like
it's... I mean, I would have done. You know in the Mine Rubble where he's climbing up that rock in that sort of black tank top? Yeah.
Are you jealous of the rock?
Oh, man, he was humping that rock as he goes up.
Of course, now he's in his 80s and very much in his dinner lady phase, isn't he?
Yeah, I went to a convention right up north. It was a sort of a small comic, very, very small, up in Newcastle. And it was so badly organised. Him and Terry Malloy were left in a room whilst the attendees filled up and nobody came in for ages. And so Fraser went, oh, this is dreadful. He goes, can we just take questions from you guys? Because I don't think the organisers are coming back.
Now, here they are having a snack. Now,
yes, plankton.
The biggest issue I have with this programme is that Zaroff's got all this technology. They're somewhere where they've got lifts and computers, but they've got no storage system for food to stop it from going off.
He couldn't have brought a fridge with him down in the lift.
And Zaroff can definitely make a refrigeration unit if he can flood the world.
Indeed. And that plankton does not look particularly alluring, does it?
Although Jamie's from the past, isn't he? He probably just ate potatoes and shit.
He's basically shoveling down horse shit. Yeah. But this is why the Doctor immediately realises that Zaroff is around, because of his pioneering plankton diet. Oh, have you heard the instrumental music to this as well?
Oh, yeah, it's brilliant.
Very strange, isn't it?
Yeah. It just goes, what? Look at this guy. So we've just met the leader, and he's bigger on makeup than his real-life counterpart, isn't he?
He is. It's all over his chest, look.
Yeah. Dirty bitch.
It's like a massive octopus.
Yeah, he looks like somebody you'd meet on an Australian beach somewhere.
Have you been on many Australian beaches?
None. But if I did, I'd expect to meet him.
I love, not him, the other one, Lolum, the high priest. Oh. He goes, oh, Amdo!
Well, he's, what's his name from the Celestial Toymaker, isn't he? Yaru!
Oh, is he Billy Bunter?
Yeah.
You know, and you'll be killed. That one!
I went to Riverside Studios and saw that on the big screen the other day, the episode 4.
You're a glutton for fucking punishment.
It was brilliant. It's fucking dreadful.
Galaxy 4 and
it was only episode 4. It was only the episode that existed. It was shown.
Did you go to any of the good ones?
No, I don't like good Doctor Who. It's rubbish. It's overrated. Caves of what? Power of the Daleks. Give me a break. Galaxy 4, Galaxy 5, Galaxy 6. I'm there the whole
time. Oh, bless you. And how was it? Sorry. No,
it was great to see it on the big screen, and it was truly as dreadful as... I mean, I'm very interested to see this new animation they've done, but the Celestial Toymaker... Episode 4 is not a great episode of Doctor Who.
Do you think you get away with a game of hop on the squares nowadays on TV?
The climax of the last episode of Doctor Who was a game of catch, so...
No way. I did like the fact that they kept it simple, though. It did feel like a homage.
I can't decide whether it's a moment of genius or terrible, but isn't that Doctor Who?
Doctor Who is... Oh, look at this.
Yeah, look, all the guards with their big grim fish faces. Mm. I really like it.
Like, going back to the animation again, I feel like they're doing more sort of shadows, the flames and that. It's come on a bit. Yeah.
And the colour palette as well.
Well, this is wild, this story. So they've gone, you know, bright.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, you look at... I know Power of the Daleks was the first one, and they've had a tinker with it a few times, and it's in black and white. But, like, the black and white actually doesn't lend itself very well to the animation, I don't think.
I mean, I'm going to let you know a little secret. You know this. They don't. And that is... I bought this on Amazon as separate episodes because I couldn't wait to get into town and buy the DVD. But I chose the colour one. I didn't choose black and white one.
I haven't watched the black and white versions of any of the ones I've got.
Well, I think the whole point is to make them accessible.
Yeah. What's the worst animation they've done? Either it doesn't have to be the quality of the animation, but what is the one you had the most trouble watching?
Reign of Terror.
Really?
Yeah. I just found the Tarantino-style cuts... to it. Jarring.
Yeah, but that's because those two episodes are basically conversations in a broom cupboard. I don't, they had to do something
like,
with it.
It's like, eye, mouth, eye, long shot, mid shot. Like, but that's in 5 seconds.
It was a bit too much.
What about you, then?
Oh, mine was The Abominable Snowman.
Why?
I think it's a dull story as is. It's got no music. And then you take away any character movements and things like that, and it just... I think that's probably up there as like one of the dullest Doctor Who stories there could possibly be as an animation. I don't know what it's like rediscovered. I've never particularly liked... I like the Target book, but I've never particularly liked the story.
I watched all 6 episodes at the BFI.
Oh, my God.
You know, right. So, and I realise there's nothing to do with Underwater Menace, but we're talking about animation, so let's go with
it. Underwater Menace is shit. We haven't got much to say.
No, Zaroth's coming up soon. That's when it picks up. Although, that fabulous shot, did you see of all the sharks going around
in the tank? Yeah, amazing.
There? I'm not sure we had that in the original.
This is a proper fucking kids' Saturday morning cartoon. Again, edit it down to 50 minutes and put it on the iPlayer for all the youths to see.
One of the cliches of hamster now is me saying that I was brought up on a diet of B-movies. Mm. I was. This is the ultimate Doctor Who B-movie.
Yeah, this is proper 1950s, like, game from outer space sort of thing.
Yeah, I'm there for it. Those fish masks.
But Doctor Who doesn't do pulp very often in the classics. Not as often as you'd think, because it often gets lumped in with it. But I'm struggling to think of too many more. Maybe The Web Planet.
Yeah.
And not just because it looks cheap and shoddy. I mean, the Galaxy 4 being those stories that are so simple, they almost don't make sense.
And, you know, comparing this, which... It does move this, and it has a crazy villain in it, and fun set pieces. Mm. You know, the Dance of the Fish People, Jesus Christ. Compare that to the Time Monster, which is basically trying to be like a weird BBC Shakespearean drama.
Yeah,
it's a bit dull, isn't it, in comparison? Anyway, back to the Abominable Snowman animation.
Zaroff!
Oh, he's here! Oh, that man next to him looks ghoulish.
Yeah, he looks like he needs an apple.
I have a secret. Didn't it say Dr. W on the original?
I think it did. I mean, I wonder what the secret... Is it from the Doctor, or do you think that's from the High Priest who's just out for a shag?
I think this looks more spectacular than it probably did as well.
Yeah, them sliding into the water.
It's such a great idea, though, isn't it? Tying them up, and they slowly slide into the fist.
It's the most budget James Bond, even on cartoon.
Excuse me, Joseph first was in a James Bond.
Was he?
Yeah, he's in... Oh, God, it's one of the Roger Moore ones, I think. He's really subdued.
I'm sure he is, but he's playing the material he's given here, and everyone's obviously having a laugh and like going, this is shit. So that, of course, they're going to play it up. I also don't think Joseph First is nearly as bad as people say he is.
In this?
Yeah.
No, he's just having fun.
Also, at no point does he say, nothing in the world can stop me now in a German accent. He shouts, nothing in the world can stop me now. But it's a cliche, much like the Dragonfire thing, that is untrue.
That's why you come in, isn't it? Yeah. To dispel all of the cliches. Yeah. He does definitely say, you are a fool!
Yeah. Like, he does float in and out of this weird cod German accent. But he definitely says, nothing in the world can stop me now, in a very English-sounding accent.
It's a cartoon character that he's playing. So
even
he's,
before it was so a cartoon.
He's given an elevated performance. How else? You're not going to underplay this, are you? The lines he's got. You know, the bit later on where he's talking to... Oh, God, what's the fella's name who's in charge of Atlantis? Oh. Him.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Octopus chess man.
Because the doctor's already said, you know, look at his eyes. Have you not noticed how psychotic he is? And he says, he's like, what are you staring at? And the capella's looking right into his eyes like, oh, I think he might be a psycho. You can't underplay this stuff.
Absolutely not.
I was going to tell you a story about the Abominable Snowman animation, but I've completely forgotten anything about that day.
we've got many more episodes to come.
No, I've just remembered.
Go on.
At the end, they opened it out to questions, and Jeremy Bentham, who I hear is quite sort of well-considered in old fan circles, you know, he might be good pals with our friend Ian Levine, stood up and asked Gary Russell why they made the appalling decision to whitewash to make it racially acceptable.
Oh, fuck off, Jeremy J. Bentham. All those old lot, I mean, they can all fuck off. I remember seeing them all lose their shit over a woman doctor, like all the old, not all of them, I'm not talking about Keith Barnfather, who's a lovely man, or Kevin Davis or David J. Howe, but there's a group of them, a couple of whom are on the Remembering Who's Doctor Who documentary. And if you go on their Facebook groups, they're a bunch of stuck-up old arseholes who are part of the problem with the sort of perceived wisdom of fandom, because they created all the first perceived wisdoms. And they're just a bunch of stuck-in-the-past old gits who think Doctor Who finished in 1979. So fuck you, Jeremy.
I don't disagree, you know. No, I was so appalled. And I got into a massive row with someone on Twitter, who was saying, you know, it should represent exactly what was on the screen in 1960 or whatever. So I asked the question, do you genuinely think they should animate these characters as if they've got sticky tape pulling back their eyes? And he said, yes, the fella. Not Jeremy Bentham, this, whoever it was I was talking to.
Oh,
anyway, sorry.
I mean, fuck those people. I've got no time for them. They're all going to be dead soon anyway.
I love how you can just dismiss whole swathes of fandom.
I don't like him. And they don't have to like me.
I don't like them either. Oh.
New fish people.
Well, that actually looks like a bit like a fish.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a soft spot for the original fish people. And I think the idea is such fantastic one. Like, obviously, there's the famous picture, but I love the fact that there's some of them that are just in snorkels and stuff like that, who are sort of mid-transition. Because they're quite a gruesome concept, that they've just turned people into these fish things to mine plankton. Is that basically what they're doing?
That's their role, is to create the food for a bit. I think, you remember we talked about the original Cybermen, the 10th Planet?
Yeah.
That sort of face like a screen.
Yeah.
They're a bit like that, aren't
they? And the most famous one that's on all the stills and on the target book has got sort of the downturn makeup smile, and it makes them look really sad.
Yeah.
So I've got a soft spot for them. I do like the reinvention here to make them a bit more fishy and a bit less...
a bit more fishy.
Yeah, well, that's what they look like.
I just like all the stuck-on scales they've got, the original.
But I like the fact that there's like a form of evolution, so some of them have been down there ages and you can see that they've adapted to it, and others are, you know... still evolving.
Now, this is one of the first appearances here of someone in a wetsuit in this.
Yeah.
And I've got to say, this is Hamster, bear in mind, that there are some impressive bulges.
Yeah.
Whoever was in charge of animating the bulges of the wetsuits, I salute you. Oh, she gives a lovely performance in the original, the woman who plays Ara.
Yeah, she doesn't look like that in the original, though, does she?
No.
They've made it look a lot more Star Trek. That
Star Trek original series.
Yeah.
It's that sort of 60s like pop colour, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Is this the, have we missed the, you're not turning me into a fish?
She gets a bit of leverage out of that line. Later on, she says, but then we're going to turn me into a fish. I've got some trivia, you know, about Patrick Troughton's opinion on this story and excitement around it. But I'm going to wait till episode two.
How exciting. Oh,
that's in a few seconds' time, yeah, actually.
Nah, I think that was a good episode one.
Yeah, I think it hasn't gone balls to the walls crazy yet, has it?
Oh, we're jumping straight into two.
Oh, Jesus Christ, I better stop the episode here then. Well,
panic!
We'll be back soon, folks.